recommendations of the Beacon Hill Architectural Commission. The public may access this call through telephone and video conferencing. Members of the public will have an opportunity to ask questions and provide public comment on applications and discussions. To do so, please raise your hand in the application via the Zoom meeting platform. If you are calling in and cannot use the platform, you can send your questions to staff via email at beaconhillac@boston.gov or via Twitter by tagging the Twitter handle at Boston Landmarks and using the hashtag BHOctober20Hearing. We'll repeat these instructions throughout the hearing. Okay, so the first item on the agenda tonight is 30 Chestnut Street.
Is there a representative here from 30 Chestnut? Am I on mute? No. Let me see if you sent me any emails. Hang on. No emails. Last chance, 30 Chestnut. All right, PT, why don't you go to the next one?
Okay, so 62 Chestnut Street is the next application.
Frank McGuire.
Hey, Frank.
Hi, Frank.
There may be a, the site supervisor for the general contractor may join us. I know he was sent a link, but he can declare himself. His name is Joseph Bocelli. I don't know if he's on because I can't see him, but there you go.
Okay. Joe is here. I see sleeping dog.
Okay, that's Joe Bocelli. So the issue, I gather I've not done this before, so I gather I have a brief period to describe this particular submission. And the scope of this submission was to replace the existing windows in the building with a compliant true divided light new window. We did submit details for that. I note, because it was observed by either staff or the architectural committee in their comments, that there are some windows that are below the sight lines behind the garden walls from Branch Street, and some of those are there for one set of those, I believe, are not true divided lights, but everything else is intended to be. And so the question that arose from staff, to which we attempted to respond, was whether or not the condition of the existing windows was so bad that they could not reasonably be restored. Our view was that they were in quite difficult condition, and that although there might be one or two that could be restored, there would be several that where the sash, the frames, the muntins are feather muntins. They're not an intermediate window from the 50s or 60s that has a certain amount of robust remaining wood. So our concern was that for continuity, by the time we took them out to restore them, there'd be so much damage that we wouldn't be able to accomplish it. And that was the basis of the submission that we've made. And I really don't have any further comments on that issue. There are a number of images showing the deterioration. Some of the sash is nailed shut. Some of the windows are operable, but relatively few. They've been seriously painted over, and so I think that the photographs at least address our view of what would be a reasonable replacement under the guidelines. The window that's proposed is a Marvin True Divided light single glazed window, and with a exterior wood, all wood profile that recalls the traditional putty glazing. And that window also has, although this is probably not germane to the serious issue of window preservation, Marvin has a very elegant storm that fits within the frame of the existing window on a very tiny profile, so that if the owner were to choose to put storm windows on these because of the single glazing, it could be done without the unsightly but legally approvable combination storm screen sash that we see elsewhere on the hill. And as you see on the building today, where you can see that there's standard storm screen double hung sash on in front of the old windows. That's the scope of this presentation.
Okay, thank you, Frank. So let's first start, are there any questions from the commission?
Are you also replacing the side lights on the door?
We had intended not to replace the side lights, that we didn't show that. The door, the entry door is in reasonably good condition. And it seemed to us that given that it's protected and given that it's in a row of doors and side lights that have some, it's next to Laurie Coolidge's house, and that was done by Cornelius Coolidge, and this was done by Cornelius Coolidge. We thought that a little roughness at the entrance wasn't going to kill anybody, and we just didn't want to detract from that little piece of the house's history.
It's just your application says two side lights, but maybe that was changed later.
No, we would not intend to introduce new side lights. I apologize if that was in the application.
Yep. Miguel, the side lights were for the lower window. I mean, I guess you could interpret those as side lights this on the ground level here.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There are side lights in the principal window at ground level, the tripartite window. And okay, those side lights are in terrible shape. I thought you were referring to the side lights at the entry door.
That's the ones I was referring to, because I wasn't clear from the application which one you meant.
Okay.
Now it's clear. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions from the commission?
Oh, really?
Okay, well, let's open it up to public comment. Members of the public will now have an opportunity to ask questions and provide public comment on applications and discussions. To do so, please raise your hand or type your question in the chat in the application via the Zoom meeting platform. If you are calling in and cannot use the platform, you can press *9 to raise your hand, or you can send your questions to staff via email at beaconhillac@boston.gov or via Twitter by tagging the Twitter handle @BostonLandmarks and using the hashtag BHOctober20Hearing. We'll repeat these instructions throughout the hearing after each application.
Okay, our first comment, Rochelle Gerwitz, would you like to make your comments?
Hi, Beacon Hill Civic Association. We would prefer to have the historic windows restored rather than replaced, if possible. There does not seem to be enough documentation that demonstrates a poor condition beyond repair as per guideline D1. Any replacement windows should be true divided lights per guideline D4. We're concerned that detail 5/7 seems to show partial divided light. The applicant should also submit shop drawings of the existing presumed historic condition to show that the replacement mutton will match the width of the historic mutton in order for the double glazed insulated glass proposed to be permitted as per guideline D6. The end of our comment.
Great, thank you. I don't see anyone else raising their hands. Gabby, do you have any messages coming in?
No, there are no messages.
I think we'll close public comment.
Okay, thank you, Joe and Gabby. So now we will open this up to discussion amongst the commissioners.
I mean, I went to see the windows and they're in pretty bad condition. I would just say that it'd be good to see the shop drawings. I didn't see the shop drawings in the application. You know, those should be submitted to staff just to verify that the windows would and three-divided light and, you know, complies. But this house is pretty dilapidated, so, you know, I think the windows didn't look very salvable to me. But
yeah. All right, thank you.
So this is Matt. Quick comment. So staff recommends that, you know, the windows, we should at least get two letters from a window restoration specialist just to confirm that these windows can't be repaired. If not, I think the replacements, the Marvin replacements are suitable, and I agree that we should have the staff review the shop drawings for appropriateness for this building. That's it.
Okay, anyone else? I agree with both of Matt and Miguel there. So Nick, Matt kind of already relayed that, but what's staff's recommendation?
Yeah, so when I looked at these windows on site, they're in pretty good condition. They need a little tender love and care and some stripping, but the slenderness of the profiles are all still there. And I have to strongly encourage that these windows are preserved rather than replaced. And if they have to be replaced, we need two letters from a restoration specialist, not an architect or contractor, a restoration specialist such as Old Bostonian, to verify that these windows cannot be repaired. And that's it.
Can I, this is Alice, can I ask a question of Frank?
Here I am.
Frank, why do you think they have to be replaced? I mean, is it a matter of it's less expensive and easier for the owner, or why have you decided that they need to be replaced?
I think that one of the things that we have not historically done when I was on the commission, even though certainly part of your question is what every owner will ask, is this going to cost me more money? My concern was that I thought, and again, I don't think that the windows, not all windows on this building are in terrible shape. Some are. And the question of continuity and scope arises. In other words, if you can fix four or five of them, then do you have to do all the others so that the building has integrity? And it seemed to us, and it was our judgment, and I think Nick's point that the only thing about the window replacement special or reconstruction specialist is that there is an element of inviting the fox into the hen house, but I think we can deal with that. There are several people that can opine without in a disinterested manner, but I think that we can pick some, but not enough, and then the building would be a sort of a mishmash. The owner actually would have an option to just leave them and patch them up the best he could, but I really don't believe that that's in the owner's sort of best interest. And so we felt that the new window unit with the profile that meets the guidelines was a reasonable way to go. There's certainly an economic issue. It's going to be more money to reconstruct and restore these windows. On the other hand, they would be done one-on-one in sight. And so I'm just concerned that there will be an overall, you're forcing all the windows in the building to be reconstructed because of this, because the muntins are unusual, thin muntins. They're what are called feather muntins, and they go back a ways. And that was why, I mean, there's a lingering, I'm not unsympathetic to both Rachel's position and Nick's position, but it just seemed like we couldn't replace some of them and not others. We'd have to do the whole thing. So that's a big scope, and I think that's where we would have to go back to the owner.
Okay, thank you, Frank. And Nick, any further discussion amongst the commission, or does anyone have a motion?
I do a motion to approve as submitted with the proviso that the applicant submits two letters of confirmation that the windows are in a situation that cannot be repaired reasonably.
I second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion that's been made and seconded. We'll have a vote. Commissioner Allen?
Aye.
Commissioner Rosales?
Aye.
Commissioner Weinberg? Aye. Commissioner Blumenthal?
Aye.
Commissioner Richmond?
Aye.
Commissioner Wen?
Aye.
Okay, great. All right, thank you, Frank.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Nick, should I divert back and see if 30 Chestnut showed up?
Yeah, try. Give it a try. Alex okay. Sloat, are you here?
I'll see y'all later.
Thanks, Frank. Bye-bye.
Bye.
30 Chestnut, going once.
He didn't show up the last time either, Nick, did he?
No, we had the application pulled from admin last time.
Okay.
Yep. All right. That's...
Was that a... Okay. All right. So moving on to 99 Charles Street.
Ray from Boston Sign. Hello?
Hey, we're still here.
All right, go ahead.
Okay. So this is a new retail tenant, and we are proposing to hang a wood sign with raised aluminum GR in the center with flat painted perimeter text to the existing bracket. Same size as the sign that was there before, except it's a circle now rather than a rectangle, 30 inch diameter. And it's, I believe, 1 inch thick. And we would also propose to put raised letters on the spandrel panel of the storefront, similar to the two adjacent stores, Starbucks and Town's Nails. And we would want to put etch film vinyl for the hours on the glass of the entry door with no other window graphics.
Okay. Seems pretty straightforward. Any questions from the commission? Okay, in that case, we'll open it up to public comment. Members of the public will now have an opportunity to ask questions and provide public comment on applications and discussions. To do so, please raise your hand or type your question in the chat in the application via the Zoom meeting platform. If you are calling in and cannot use the platform, you can press *9 to raise your hand, or you can send your questions to staff via email at beaconhillac@boston.gov or via Twitter by tagging the Twitter handle @BostonLandmarks. And using the hashtag BHOctober20Hearing, we will repeat these instructions after each application throughout the hearing.
Hey, Rochelle Gerwitz, would you like to make your comments?
Hi, Beacon Hill Civic Association. No objections to the new signage, but we would like clarification on the material of the lettering adhesively applied to the entablature. We discourage any additional window decals since guideline I-9 limits graphics to single sign per business, except for one additional projecting sign per building. The hours on the door are okay, but we're just questioning that there was a rendering published in the Beacon Hill Times on September 17th that shows some, like a large logo in the storefront window and applied lettering in the transom above the door. And we're just wondering if those are intended to still be added, because otherwise we would object to that as too much signage. Thank you.
all the letters are individual letters, and they're made of aluminum. And the letters that are, you state that are on the glass right now, we did not do, and I will make sure that they have them removed, because the only signage that we're proposing is what's on this drawing.
Okay, I'm not seeing anyone else raising their hands. Gabby, do you have any comments coming in?
No, there are no comments.
I think we can close public comment.
Okay, thank you, Joe and Gabby. Discussion amongst the commission?
Looks good to me.
We hear staff comments.
Yeah, hi. So staff recommends approval, but after hearing the clarification from the applicant, I now recommend approval as submitted.
Okay, so we've gone through that. Does anyone have a motion?
And the motion to approve as submitted.
Okay, I will second that motion. Commissioner Allen?
Yes, I'll second that motion.
Okay. Well, I actually seconded, so we're voting. Commissioner Allen?
Aye.
All right, thank you. Commissioner Rosales?
Aye.
Commissioner Weinberg? Aye. Commissioner Blumenthal?
Aye.
Commissioner Richmond?
Aye.
Commissioner Wen?
Aye.
All right, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, we are on to 24 Garden Street.
He's still the fuck.
Hi,
Michael. Unbelievable.
Michael Tim?
Yep. All right, I'm not going to bother, because I gave him the courtesy of leaving him on this application, even though it's missing information. So we're just going to go to the next one.
Okay, we are on to 33 Branch Street, and I believe I saw Marcel sign in. So,
hi, I'm here, Anna Summers, and my husband will be here shortly. I think Marcel may be on the call as well, our contractor.
Okay, great.
It's really just some exterior changes with paint color. There it is. Okay, so this is sort of the summary. The current outside of our house, and we are going to change we're proposing to change the existing exterior facade and windows, heads and sills with Benmore White Dove, low luster. So basically everywhere that you see sort of the off-white and the pink will be white. You know, the little, like the headers and the footers or whatever they're called on the windows. Then the rest will be black, which is the garage door, the front door, the shutters, and the window sashes, I think you call them. That all will be black, ideally. And then we're replacing the hardware. Right now there's sort of a oil rub bronze, I believe. And we were hoping to put a non-lacquered brass. And that would be this, it's the same doorknob and deadbolt, just a different material. This is the finish, the colors of what we're proposing in terms of White Dove and black. That's an unlacquered knocker that would replace what's there right now. And if you go to the last screen, that's the doorknob. And that is technically an unlacquered brass. I think it looks like a regular brass. I think it just weathers a little bit and it's not quite as shiny. And that's what the hardware would look like in terms of the letter, the door kick, the numbers, and the doorknob and deadbolt. So that's what we're proposing. And I think that's everything.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions from the commission?
Nick, do you have a photo of the door that we can see up close?
Yeah,
the picture. No, but you know what? I wonder if I can get one quickly.
I can bring it up on Google. Let me just bring it up here.
Yeah.
33 Branch.
And while you're looking for that, just for clarity, you're not proposing to change the paint on the main body of the stucco?
The main body, it'll be a little whiter. It's currently kind of a grayish color right now. So it would be it'll be a little bit more of a off-white instead.
The sills and the main facade would be the same white.
Yes.
As we're proposing.
Yeah.
And it's not stucco. It's brick.
It's brick. It's painted brick. And right now it's like a little bit of a kind of grayish white, I guess. And we were going to try and change it to a dove white, which is more of a creamy color.
Okay. All right.
This is very impressive, by the way.
Yeah, I am. I wish I'd figured out how to do that.
That's it.
Yeah.
So you're changing the kick plate, the mail slot, and the knocker?
Yes, and the doorknob. And the doorknob and the deadbolt, just to a brass color.
Okay. Are you doing anything with the bell?
The bell?
Yep. Yeah, the doorbell.
No, we hadn't planned to.
Okay. Not very nice.
Yeah, I wonder if there's something else we could do to change it. I don't know. We hadn't really thought about it, but we could try.
We would agree with you. It's not very nice.
if we can find it in brass, we can do that for you too.
There's available that you could use with on lacquer brass. It will look better with your overall composition, but it's not part of this application, but you should consider it.
Okay.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
We also should take down that ugly no parking sign. So sorry about that.
That was from the last owners. Maybe there's a more stylish no parking sign you can put there. I don't know.
Can you tell me what you're painting black again? Was it the lintels and the shutters and the door?
The shutters and then the actual window. I don't know if they're called like the cross hatching on the windows. Right now they're green and they'll be black instead of green.
The muttons.
And then the muttons, I guess.
And then the garage door
and the garage and the door, door and the front door. Oh, no, yeah, the garage door and the front door.
How about what's over the window, the lintel?
That is painted, that's like a painted kind of a peachy colored, and we were just going to make that white to match the body.
White dove, yeah.
Yes, okay. Match the body.
All right, any other questions from commissioners? Okay, so let's move it along to public comment. Members of the public will now have an opportunity to ask questions and provide public comment on applications and discussions. To do so, please raise your hand or type your question in the chat in the application via the Zoom meeting platform. If you are calling in and cannot use the platform, you can press *9 to raise your hand, or you can send your questions to staff via email at beaconhillac@boston.gov or via Twitter by tagging the Twitter handle @BostonLandmarks and using the hashtag BHOctober20Hearing. We will repeat these instructions after each application throughout the hearing.
Okay, Rochelle Gerwitz, would you like to make your comment?
Hi, Beacon Hill Civic Association. We recommend denial without prejudice. We feel that masonry paint should remain as is and be allowed to weather as indicated in guideline G4. It is our understanding that the building has been this color for many decades, likely dating to before the establishment of the historic district. We would prefer the doors, window, head, sills, and shutters to also remain in their existing colors per guideline G1. It states that paint color shall be original or otherwise historically appropriate. However, if the applicant can show historic evidence of another color scheme, that could be considered. No objection to hardware.
Thank you, Rochelle. Martha McNamara, would you like to make your comments?
Hi, Martha McNamara. There are a handful of buildings on the hill, brick buildings that were painted this gray color. And it's the color palette of the 1920s. And this is really typical, it seems to me, this gray facade, painting the brick facade gray with the green trim and the green shutters and the green door, and then maybe, a pop of color of red on the in the main door. That's a classic palette of the 1920s, and I think it probably does date to before the district. And it's important to remember that, one of the goals of historic preservation is to preserve the history of a neighborhood and as it's changed over time. And the 1920s is just as much an important time period as, you know, the 1820s. So just as I would say, I wouldn't want you, well, for lots of reasons, I wouldn't want you to strip the paint off this building because it would be very bad for the building. Once having painted brick, you don't really want to take the paint off. Just as I wouldn't want you to try and bring it back to the 18, you know, whatever its original condition, I would really strongly urge you to keep the palette of the 1920s. And I think the guidelines suggest that. The gray, again, and the green are very classic 1920s. Also, the headers and the lintels and the sills are that color because they're meant to connote brownstone, right? And they're meant to pick out the headers and the sills from the background of the facade. That's why they're not painted gray. So it also gives some definition to the building. So I would strongly encourage that the application be denied and that the if there is going to be repainting, that it be done in kind. Thank you.
Thank you, Martha. I don't see anyone else raising their hand. Gabby, do you have any messages coming in?
No messages have come in.
Okay, I think we can close public comment.
Okay, thank you, Joe and Gabby. Any discussion amongst the commissioners?
I'm a little concerned about white daub as a color. It's very light, you know, usually used for interior of buildings. I don't know if there's another white daub in Beacon Hill. And, you know, I do agree that the gray color is very traditional for many buildings. There's many in the south and north slope that are this color. So I will suggest to keep the gray, but I do have a problem with the pinkish color of the, you know, lintels of the windows. It looks very odd and it doesn't look like brownstone at all. So if anything, I would suggest maybe they copy the color from the next door, which looks more appropriate to me, or, you know, some other color they can find. This pink color is very odd. And I don't have any objection to make it all black. I think traditionally a lot of the houses are black in terms of the shutters and the doors, and keep this door red probably just to, you know, have some memory of that door. Those are my comments.
This is Matt. I'm completely in line with Miguel's comments. Maybe the lintels and the sill could match the surround of the larger carriage door.
Like it's a something. More historic color. That pink color is very odd.
Yep. And I'm okay with the hardware.
Any other commissioner comments? Staff's opinion?
Yeah, hi. So my comments are very similar to the civic associations. I feel that the color should be left as is to weather in place according to the guidelines. And then all of the hardware is approved. I would be willing to compromise and allow the windows and sills to be painted black.
Okay. But the proposal has the heads and sills as the white.
Oh.
Yeah. You're okay with that?
Yeah. Sorry. Yes.
Basically gray base, white dove on the sills and trim, yes. On the sills and lintels, and then black on the shutters, yep. Sashes, door, garage.
Yes.
Okay. And I think everyone's in agreement that the hardware is fine. Okay. I mean, my thoughts. My thoughts are similar, that the facade color should stay in weather. Fine with the black. Fine with the hardware. I guess just the, you know, what I would want to discuss further is there enough contrast, and, you know, architecturally, the sills and the lintels being the white dove on the gray, and then the black on the shutters and the.
I mean, I think doing the white dove on the lintels is very strange.
Yeah.
It should be darker than the.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going with that. Yeah.
That's why I suggested look at the color surrounding the large door, the carriage house door.
God.
Right here.
So you want a little bit darker lintel and sill, and you have the lighter field.
That gray color. That's the same as around our garage. Okay, that makes sense to me.
Okay, all right. Yeah, I'm on board with that, Matt. So, okay. Yeah, that makes total sense. I thought that the white on the existing facade color would look strange. So, agreed on that. And I think that will actually look nice with the existing facade, that gray with the black. I think that'll be a nice palette. Okay, does anyone have a motion?
I do a motion to approve as submitted with the proviso that the facade body, the brick painted, stay the same color. You know, you can repaint if you need to. Then the lintels and, over part of the window be the gray color that is over the garage. And everything that is wood will be black. The shutters, the window mattings, the garage door, the main door. And the hardware as proposed is appropriate, unlike the brass.
I'll second that with a friendly amendment that gray color to be approved by staff.
Yes, you should submit a color to match the existing.
Yep. Yeah, and to just be confirmed by staff. Okay. You good with that, Miguel?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So we have a motion that's been made and seconded. Commissioner Allen?
Aye.
Commissioner Rosales?
Aye.
Commissioner Weinberg? Aye. Commissioner Blumenthal?
Aye.
Commissioner Richmond?
Aye.
Commissioner Wen?
Aye.
Okay, great. All right, thank you very much.
Thanks for your help, all.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we are on to 6 Lewisburg Square.
There's 2 of us here, Will Rule, as well as myself, Sandra Janes. I'm not sure if Will.
Oh, right. There we go.
Okay, there we are.
Yeah, thank you. Good evening, commissioners. My name is William Rule from Rule Studios. And the overall intention with this project, which is extensive, is to renovate the entire house inside and outside. But the focus on the Lewisburg Square facade is to restore it. It has been sort of benignly neglected for decades. There's a ton of water damage inside, and we intend to restore it to match its original 1842 details. My other principal, Sandra Janes, is going to lead you through this presentation, and we'll try to be brief, but we're happy to answer questions and address concerns at the end.
Great. So yes, we have a fairly lengthy list of scope items, so we're happy to circle back as necessary. Just running through this outline on this page here, we'll cover some repair and reconstruction of the masonry facade, same with chimneys. Also repair, replacement of slate roof, replace non-original windows, as well as looking at the entry door frame and side lights and restoring the existing door slab. We also are looking at repairing a really basic metal rail at the rooftop. Some of the modifications that we're proposing include installing an EV charger at the street, replacing a non-original door at the garden level and recessing it 2 feet back in plan, painting the existing main entrance door in an owner selected color, installing a new door system at the rear of the house, which we are mentioning primarily in order to point out that it is not visible from a public way. Same with a recessed door system on the rear, again, of the home, which again is not visible from a public way in the proposed position that we'll present to you. Also looking to replace skylights at the top of the home that have some unsightly ventilation pipes and other items, and we're looking to place a low profile skylight. And then lastly, installation of HVAC equipment, not visible from a public way.
I'm sorry to interject here. Nick, can you confirm that those three cited items are not visible from a public way?
That's correct, yeah. So I visited the site with the architect, great. And none of them are visible.
Okay, so we don't have to touch on any of that, just so.
Yeah, we'll just skim past those.
Great, okay, thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I think we can move to the next page. Great, these are just some historic photos for reference. This property is a twin. Number 6 is a twin with number 4. These elevations point out the same scope items I just discussed. So on the left side is the existing elevation. The right side is the proposed. You'll see that there's very little visible modification, mostly replacing in kind. The exception being the skylight, which is highlighted in blue at the top, and the the door at garden level, which is also highlighted in blue. Continue to the next slide. So again, as confirmed, the areas in blue are proposed to be new changes to the building, but they are not visible from a public way. Here's some examples of some of the masonry problems on the building. The left image is showing a southwest chimney, which is obviously in disrepair. The one on the southeast is in equally dangerous condition. The lower right image is an interior photo, but it shows the northeast cheek wall, which has actually displaced by anywhere probably about 4 inches at the top of that cheek wall in the direction of 8 Louisburg Square. There's also some displacement of the stone cornice, which you can see in the top middle image. Later in the presentation, I believe there should be an image of it from the exterior, but it's moved. I believe this presentation might be a little outdated. I hope you received, it's fine. I think we can refer to this, but this might not be the most current presentation from us.
Okay. What was different? Do you know? I mean,
we just had, I'm just noticing some minor differences. We had kind of blown up these details, but, we'll continue and, I'll let you know if there seems to be sure. Anything critical. These are images of the proposed replacement windows. The image on the upper right is an example of the window detailing we're looking to use. This is done by the same custom window fabricator, Littleton Millwork. They've produced the shop drawings below as well. Obviously, true divided light, trying to match all the dimensions on the muntins. The same pocket details. Interior shutters as well being fabricated in kind.
Sandra, could I just ask a quick question so that you can answer it in front of the commission? I forgot when we met if these windows were original, the larger windows. Can you just confirm that?
I think the assessment is that they are not.
Okay, that's what I was thinking. I just couldn't remember. Thank you.
Yeah, there's a good amount of evidence that they are not, from non-wavy glass to just the con- conditions of the sashes, our millworker concurred that they were not original to the property.
There's a fair amount of metal visible in the window systems, which sends a pretty strong message.
Yeah, it's coming back to me now. There was a lot to that day.
So, yeah.
Thanks, Will.
Thanks.
So this drawing here is from our landscape architect who put together this proposal for an EV charger. And we did receive some comment prior to this meeting from Robert Whitney, actually coming up with an interesting alternative solution to this. I think our landscape architect was putting together a substitution. We're happy to share that with you. But this shows a granite block above the brick surface of the sidewalk, into which at the side there would be an EV charger for the homeowner's use here on Lewisburg Square. The revised version that Robert Whitney suggested included a plate to resemble more or less some of the gas access plates that are currently on this sidewalk at grade, so flush with the brick. So that was a comment that came in just prior to this meeting. Yeah.
So basically you sink that down, the top of it is pretty much flush with grade, less the depth of a cover, so to speak, that's replicated to look like what you just described.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
We can share an updated version of this drawing if you'd allow us to share our screen.
Yeah, sure. Let me make you a... Who has it? Do you have it, Will, or does Sandra?
Sandra.
I do, yeah.
Joe, if you could make Sandra a co-host.
Just did.
Okay, perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, let me stop sharing mine.
That's okay. There we go. I'll share this. Is that visible to everyone? There was some fancy Photoshop work done to make the EV plate cover resemble the gas here. But that's the idea that was proposed. So.
Awesome, thank you.
Okay. Since this presentation does seem a little outdated from what we submitted on Monday, would you object to me sharing?
Go for it.
Okay, yep. Thank you. Can everyone see the window detail now?
We can see it.
Yes, okay.
Yes.
So that's the enlarged version I was referring to. I'm also going to, I apologize for the whiplash, but I'm going to just show you some of the condition of the existing windows on the property, which we included as an appendix. So we've sort of labeled and photographed the various windows on the project, and I will just quickly refer to some of the level of decay of, these are some of the lower windows, which may or may not be original. But there is a fair amount of rot on existing jams and other aspects here. So we have a full photographic appendix if anyone, I'm hoping that version got to people. Okay, so I will continue. Again, I'm not going to refer to the backside because as we've concluded, this is not visible from public way.
Sorry, real quick. If you could just go back to the rear. I just want to point out to commissioners one element that Will and his team are working on. So Sandra and Will, confirm with me if this is correct, but the condensers will be sunken into the roof on each side. Is that correct?
So we did discuss that with our clients and our HVAC sub, but we've actually found, I think, a better solution, which doesn't require us to completely rebuild the entire roof.
Okay.
So that we can leave all the original wood structure exposed on the top floor.
Okay.
And it doesn't change the roof profile. And it required and I think Sandra has some slides to show, but it requires fewer roof condensers that are therefore easier to place in such a way that they're not visible from Mount Vernon, from Louisburg Square, or from Pinckney.
From all the vantage points that we looked at the other day, correct?
Correct. And actually, we found some additional vantage points after you and I met that we would never have guessed. And there were some funny spots in Pinckney that it basically killed the previous idea, because we always had at least one condenser visible. So we're in the process of revamping the entire HVAC system for fewer rooftop condensers, and they're skinnier and easier to hide behind the chimneys.
Perfect. Okay.
Sure, so if you can see, I'm hoping you can see the photographs on the screen right now of our mock-up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So yeah, it is on an odd diagonal, but it is therefore shielded by the north and south chimneys from the discussed vantage points. So.
And we'd be happy to walk the site with you again, just to confirm that, of course.
No, that's fine. We can just write it into the approval letter that they're approved as long as they're not visible.
Okay.
Great. Just continuing on, one other modification that the owners requested for safe entry and is this garden level door, which is currently butted right up against the lowest riser of these stairs. And so the proposed solution is to move it a minimal 2 feet inboard to create, a very small landing space. We've also discussed replacing this non-original door in a configuration to match the neighboring door with these two lights, trying to match these two doors. The entrance to the home at 6 Louisburg Square is this image shown in the foregrid here. And our goals were to restore this door, which needs a little love, but it seems salvageable. Our hopes were to replace the side lights. There's some rotted conditions that we think would be addressed by doing so. We would replace in kind to match the existing detailing. The owner has lived for quite some time in Beacon Hill and is very proud of her door, this color shown on the left here. And this is a home on West Cedar Street. And her hope is to use this door color here on 6 Louisburg Square. Again, at the roofline, there's these unsightly pitched skylights with these ventilation pipes. The goal here is to replace or demolish both of these and replace them with something that is much lower profile in getting it into one singular skylight unit, trying to bring it down so that it's not quite as visible from public way. Lastly, this is that same roof that we just viewed, and then here's the equipment mock-up. And then the remainder of the presentation was the appendix with documentation of all the window units. Please let me know if there's a section of the presentation that you'd like us to return to. We're happy to expand upon anything in here. It's a lot.
Sandra, do we know if there's going to be any concern with the EV charger in the wintertime when the ground freezes over and or ice forms over the flap?
Yeah, I mean, this has been discussed. The reason that the raised granite block was proposed was in hopes of putting the charger on the side of that to keep weather away from that. You know, another idea that was thrown around was placing it on the side of the granite curb, the existing granite curb, but that presents a number of challenges. So again, this conversation came up earlier today, so I'm not sure that we fully wrapped our head around the weather's impact on a on an at-grade charger. I'm not sure.
Thank you.
I think the original inspiration was more like a granite hitching post, that kind of idea that stuck up above ground but didn't look out of place because we've seen those historically. This was a shorter version of that. So, and I believe the concern was, you know, is that a tripping hazard? Our client is definitely concerned about a flush condition. For exactly the reasons you stated, you know, what does happen when there's snow and heavy rain, that kind of thing. I think been doing a little bit of research. I mean, I love this idea, frankly, to do something flush. But I, you know, there's some definite technical challenges with it, and you know, how to make it safe. So that you, when you open it up, you know the Unises are safely attaching their charger to the power source. But it's definitely less, you know, it's not a trip hazard if it's flush. I think the way, and maybe we could unmute Stephen Mansfield, because he's with Matthew Cunningham's office, and he is the designer. But I believe it was placed originally so that it was kind of aligned with the street lamp that's just to the north here. So there was still you know, plenty of travel space and
Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, yeah, great. So I'm Stephen Mansfield with Matthew Cunningham, Landscape Design. And the original block was placed to be in line roughly with the existing light pole that is there. So any clearance or access issues were avoided, or if not, they were already in place. And all the concerns that were brought up already have been thought about, but only thought about from about 2 o'clock today to now about the flush mounted EV charger. And we do know that there are weatherproof boxes that can go in the ground, but that doesn't prevent ice from freezing over the top and not being able to get to it. So there's a number of concerns with a flush mounted situation, and as well as we're aware of the concerns with the block that comes out of the ground. And we're definitely open to other options as well. I think the big thing is getting the EV charger in place that doesn't look out of place.
Is there any way to retrofit that light pole that's pretty close to it?
That's what I was hoping for.
That would be great. I know that light pole is gas, and if we put an electric line in there, that could be an issue. But it could be done. Yeah, that would be great.
Well, I mean, that, and I guess this is probably a good segue. Your presentation is complete, correct, Sandra? And well,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. And awesome, like really user-friendly, by the way. I love like the highlighting on the windows and stuff. Just sidebar for any other architects in the audience. That was really, really well done. So thank you for that. It made it really easy to follow. What about, I mean, again, as far as like the tripping hazard component of it, you know, the visual is another, and maybe this is more discussion than question, but, you know, if you had that block really close to the light post versus Matt's idea of trying to retrofit the light post, if you just had it, you know, pretty tight near there, you know, I'd say it makes it a lot less of a tripping hazard because, you know, unless someone's going to run into the post anyways. And yeah, that's a whole other conversation, but, you know, so that's just the one thought I had, because the weather question is a concern. I mean, there's got to be, to your point, Will, a way to, you know, weatherproof what's underneath, but that still doesn't necessarily insulate the cover itself from icing over or what have you. And, you know, maybe that's just the compromise of trying to get something like this done, is you're just going to have to try to figure out a way to deal with that 10, 15 days a year. But, all right. So I guess any other specific questions from the commissioners before we open up to public comment?
I have a question again about this device, and I understand it's still a work in progress, but it seems to me that there are two issues. One is what it's like when it's not connected, and the other is what it's like when it is, because the tripping hazard, it seems to me, maybe I don't understand how these things work. I'm the first one to say that. But the tripping hazard seems to me to be greater when the car is plugged into it than when it's closed and flush to the ground. So, you know, I'm not understanding exactly what it's going to look like. You know, I see the picture, but presumably when the car is plugged in, there's something going to it, which, you know, might be much more of a tripping hazard.
It's a very good point that you're making, and actually our client is concerned with that as well, getting in and out of the car with the car plugged in, for instance. And you know, I think that was one of the initial thoughts with the slightly raised version, is that would be located right where the car plug is. So that's why it's down at sort of the bottom of where the car would be. And so no one would be walking, crossing the street there, because there's a car in the way and there's a block in the way. And, you know,
I have a question though, and again, it may be evidence of my ignorance of how these cars get plugged in. You know, on the one hand, the notion of putting a car charger on Lewisburg Square is laughable. On the other, you know, it seems to me if we're going to move ourselves, however reluctantly, into the 21st century, this needs to be addressed. They may be the case of first impression, but they won't be the last. So the question I have is that, is there a way that it goes under the sidewalk and right to the street itself, so that there's no question about, you know, the car is either on top of it getting charged or gone and flush with the road and not on the sidewalk at all?
Well, what you're describing could be an argument for having the outlet mounted on the face of the granite curb, which is not a stepping surface, not a tripping hazard. And when the car is parked, the power cord would essentially be between the car and the power charging outlet, and therefore not within anyone's path of travel. So
I think that once you start agreeing or allowing boxes of various sorts to be put on the sidewalk, you know, it's very hard to stop that precedent. And that's why I think we need to be really very, very careful about approving this until, you know, we are confident that it does not represent either, you know, an aesthetic affront to the neighborhood, or, you know, a safety hazard to people walking. And now I'll shut up.
Thank you, Alice. There's just one more thing I just wanted to mention to the commission. If anyone has any questions about the workings of car chargers, we do have a representative here from the Boston Transportation Department, Sam Devine. So she's listening So if you have any questions about the operation, because Lewisburg Square is a private street, this would not fall under her jurisdiction, but she's the expert in car charging. So if you have questions, she'd be happy to answer them.
Okay. Thanks, Nick. And all right, so I think we'll obviously have some more discussion as a commission, but let's pivot over to public comments, and then we'll start our conversation again. So members of the public will now have an opportunity to ask questions and provide public comment on applications and discussions. To do so, please raise your hand or type your question in the chat in the application via the Zoom meeting platform. If you're calling in and cannot use the platform, you can press star 9 to raise your hand, or you can send your questions to staff via email at beaconhillac@boston.gov or via Twitter by tagging the Twitter handle @BostonLandmarks and using the hashtag BHAugust20Hearing. Excuse me, BH October 20 hearing. We will repeat these instructions throughout the hearing after each application. I was waiting for myself to mess that up once because I'm using my August script. So with that, I will turn it over to Joe for public comment.
Rochelle Gerwitz, would you like to make your comment?
Hi, Beacon Hill Civic Association. We prefer that the front door frame and side lights should be repaired rather than replaced per guideline E1 for doors and guideline D1 for windows. The garden level door should also be kept as is and not recessed. It is our understanding that the sidewalk is owned by the proprietors of Lewisburg Square, who need to be consulted about the EV charger and have not yet come to an agreement for its installation. We recommend that the applicant consider making the outlet flush to the sidewalk, perhaps hidden under a cast iron cover. It should be noted that guideline K2 states that street furniture is defined as any structure erected or placed in the public or private ways on a temporary or permanent basis, and that authorized public safety, public welfare, street furniture includes but is not limited to such structures as streetlights, traffic lights, mailboxes, fire hydrants, and trash receptacles. It should be noted that guideline K1 states that street furniture, as defined in the just mentioned guideline K2, shall not be permitted in the historic Beacon Hill District with the exception of approved storefront merchandise stands and those structures erected or placed by authorized public agencies for public safety and or public welfare purposes. We feel that the EV charging station as a protruding object will fall under the category street furniture and should therefore be denied. And it should be noted that it is for a private use. Thank you.
Thank you, Rochelle. Rob Whitney, would you like to make your comment?
Yeah, hi, this is Rob. I just followed what Rochelle did. I didn't want to duplicate it, but I did want to just explain a little bit. I did have a great conversation with Stephen earlier today. I thought it'd be great because we're not opposing the idea of an electric vehicle charger. The contrary, I think it's a great idea to have such things on Beacon Hill. The question of how do we bring it into the historic fabric, and this was one idea we had suggested, is because there's already so many similar type outlets, not electrical outlets, but for water and for gas and oil throughout Beacon Hill that obviously are there during the winter and are accessible. And our understanding is, and I'm also familiar with electric charging, this is just an outlet. The actual charging electronics are all inside, going to be inside the home. This is literally no different than having an outdoor outlet, that it can be waterproofed in a very simple way. In fact, I discussed it with Stephen. It comes in a waterproof outlet, and it could be easily waterproofed. So I think really the issue is we're concerned about the precedent, in addition to the idea that this would be street furniture subject to the guidelines, the very explicit guidelines that prohibits them, except under very certain circumstances. And here, I think the idea is that it can be easily done. It would not be a tripping hazard. It'll be right close to the vehicle. It'll look very good in the neighborhood because it'll match the other existing cast iron covers. And it's probably a good choice to try it. And I think it would be successful. And I think the applicant will be pleased with the results, and the neighborhood will be as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Martha McNamara, would you like to make your comment?
Sure. So can I suggest that the commissioners vote to deny the EV charger for these reasons, many of which have already been alluded to. But essentially, I'm glad that we're moving away. I hope we're moving away from the granite block. And I think there are lots of reasons, including it would violate the guidelines, lots of reasons not to go in that direction. But most important is that we should remember that Lewisburg Square is owned by the proprietors of Lewisburg Square. It's a collective. The individual homeowners own, as I understand it, to the edge of their buildings. And then everything else in Lewisburg Square, that includes the sidewalks, the granite curbs, the cobblestones, and the greensward, are all owned as a collective by the proprietors. The individual house owners don't even own their own parking spaces out front. Those are assigned by the proprietors. So really, the first step for this applicant is to go to the proprietors and get their permission on a scheme for an EV charger, much like anybody else would have to go to ZBA or ISD to get approved. And then they should come to the commission. I applaud the flush mounted. I did a little research and found that in New York City they're putting in manhole covers that act as chargers. So I think that's probably the wave of the future. But I think what the commission needs is a fully thought out and spec'd proposal. So my suggestion again is that you just pull this part of the proposal out of the application. Second, on the service door to the ground floor level, I think that should remain in its position. As you pointed out, the twin next door, that door is in the same place. And I think for the integrity of the entire build, that it should stay where it is. And I think that's it. Thank you.
Martha, I'm seeing anyone else raising their hand. Yes. Gabby, do you have any messages?
No, there are no messages.
We can close public comment.
Okay, thank you, Joe. Thank you, Gabby. All right, so let's open it up to commission discussion. I kind of agree with a handful of the public comment and having managing a building in Lewisburg Square and having attended the annual meeting of proprietors years ago, I do believe Martha is correct on the ownership of that area really not candidly falling in the purview of this property owner. And I would just say that we deny that part of the application without prejudice and let them come back with, you know, a more fleshed out proposal. I think it's clear from the discussion that in concept, a flush installation is not something we would be completely opposed to. That being said, I don't necessarily know if this applicant has jurisdiction to even apply for that, candidly. So,
APT?
Yep.
We could make an approval contingent on getting the approval of the Lewisburg Square group. Just a thought.
Okay. Yep. No, thank you. That's certainly something that we could, you know, put in there that, you know, we would, the proviso that we would require a letter from the proprietors of Lewisburg Square, you know, assenting to the approval. So that's a good suggestion and, you know, potentially obviously saves a second trip here, assuming that we're all on board with that flush installation. So that's my two cents on that. I also agree with that service level door being a twin. I think it should match. I think it should stay in its current, current location. I didn't really have any other issues with any other elements of the application. Again, just want to applaud the architects for a really thorough, but also just, you know, again, user-friendly and easy to follow on what's, you know, a pretty complex application. So that's my commentary.
Can I ask a question about the front door? I wasn't sure. So currently there are side lights, right? And are you proposing to keep the side lights or are you proposing to get rid of the side lights?
Just rebuild the side lights and because they're falling apart. And with the current design, there's a slight difference between number 6 and number 4. In terms of the base at the bottom, number 4 has more glass. Number 6 has a slightly higher base. Nick, I don't know if we looked at this with you or not, but Anyway, the plan is to rebuild it in kind, rebuild the sidelights as currently designed in kind.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, because I mean, as everybody's mentioning, it's a twin, so I think it's really important that they stay as a twin. So
one, another thing we discussed regarding the front door when Nick was on site with us, and I actually looked back at some historic photos that I've been able to unearth, that all of the trim around the windows and even around the doors was in the 19th century dark. So, you know, black and white photos, what does that dark mean? I don't know. But we are actually taking the original door down and seeing what colors are under the current sort of dirty green. When we did walk through with Nick, we were able to see several layers of paint colors under there. But in terms of the trim itself and around the windows, the hope was that we wouldn't repaint the window trim in this sort of off-white color that is, you know, obviously we see that everywhere, but it actually wasn't the original coloration. If you flip back to this, yeah. So, you know, horse and buggy photo down there, everything is dark, including the brick mold around the windows and including the windows themselves. So
you're making everything black then?
I don't think it would be black, and I don't think it was black necessarily. I believe it might have been a green that is almost black.
But what are you proposing?
So we're proposing for the front door itself to actually not match the original. And this is a personal touch that the client has requested. She's always painted her front doors of every house she's ever lived in a red. Sandra can remind me what the color is.
Rembrandt red.
What is it?
Rembrandt red. Yeah, it's here.
So, but for the trim around the, you know, for the side lights, and the trim or the brick mold around the windows, we're talking about a very dark green that's almost black, but not black. Okay. The windows themselves, I think those would be black. Okay. The muntins and the sash. So there'd be a little bit of contrast with the windows themselves.
Okay. I mean, I think the flush-mounted solution for the EV charger is good. If you are concerned about the freezing, you could put, you know, some way to heat it in the winter as possible with a very small wire, and you can keep it heated. You know, there is precedent for sidewalks that are heated in Beacon Hill. Like, you could take a look at 85 Mount Vernon Street. You know, those sidewalks are heated. And I think that would work well for you. I would be opposed to have the granite block. I think it's very odd, and we set a bad precedent, and, you know, a trip hazard and all sorts of issues that we don't want to get into. And probably you'll get a much better endorsement from the proprietors if you do it flush, because it's less obtrusive and you're less visible. I do agree that the door should not be recessed. I understand that you want to protect it for the weather, but, you know, it's a twin, so it would look very strange to recess one and not at the other. So I think that should not be recessed. And the red door, I think it's a matter of taste. There is many red doors in Beacon Hill. So if the client wants red door, I think it's okay to have a red door. I don't see a big problem with that.
Thank you, Miguel. Any other comments from the commissioners? Nick, could we please have staff comments?
Thanks, PT. So the staff recommends approval with the following provisos. That the charging port be installed flush with the sidewalk if possible. If not, staff recommends that it's approved as submitted. That the windows are restored where possible, which we already established they're not original, so that's fine. That the front door frame is replaced as requested, but the side lights most likely should be restored due to the delicate nature of the crossbars, and that the lower garden door remain in its place and replace with a more appropriate door. And staff also recommends that we approve the EV charger because we're currently in a climate crisis, and regardless of the style, this is something that could help Boston become carbon neutral by 2030. Thanks.
Okay, great, thank you. So the your note that the windows are restored, that's a non-issue anymore because it's right. Proven non-original.
Correct, yes.
Okay, all right, so I'm gonna make a motion that we approve the application as submitted with the following provisos: that the charging port is installed flush with the sidewalk, and that a letter of confirmation of approval from the proprietors of Lewisburg Square be supplied to staff. That the front door frame is replaced, and the side light should be restored. That you may paint the main door the Rembrandt red, and that the lower garden door remain in its place and is replaced in kind.
Could you clarify whether the intention would be to replace in kind literally or to replace to match the neighboring property, the twin?
Oh yeah, because you want to add the one with the two lights.
Just because that looked like the more likely to be an original door, and our door has applied trim.
Yeah, I can amend my motion to say that the door remain in its place and can be replaced to match the door at 4.
Thank you.
So PT?
Yeah.
Sorry, I just got to interject real quick. I did consult a preservation specialist, Martha McNamara, and okay. She had informed me that most likely the doors would not have had lights because it would have been a servant's entrance and they wouldn't have spent that amount of money. So I would recommend that we approve a door without lights.
Without lights? Okay.
That's fine.
Okay, thank you for that clarity. Then I will keep that original proviso that the lower garden door remain in place and be replaced in kind in its current configuration.
Just one comment. I think, you know, if we're going to make everything black, maybe the side light should be also black. They're talking about an exit green, and I don't know why would that, you know, be better if everything else is black. So that'd be the only amendment I would do.
I'm fine with that amendment as well.
So am I.
I'll second.
Okay, so we have a motion that's been made and seconded. Commissioner Allen.
Aye.
Commissioner Rosales.
Aye.
Commissioner Weinberg. Aye. Commissioner Blumenthal.
Aye.
Commissioner Richmond.
I have one question on your motion. Your motion with respect to the was that it had to be flush. Was that the motion?
On the service door?
No, on the charger.
Oh yeah, the charger would have to be flush, and also they will have to provide a letter of consent approval from the proprietors of Lewisburg Square and supply that letter to staff.
Okay, I vote aye.
Okay, Commissioner Wen?
Aye.
Okay, great. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, the final application for the evening is 55 Pinckney Street.
I'm going to need to leave.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Miguel.
Thanks, Miguel. Who's the name on there, PT? Do you have that?
It's Harry Nealon, Alpha Masonry.
Harry, are you here? These chimney guys don't listen to directions, do they? Harry? No.
Bueller.
Bueller? All right.
Okay. All right. So we are on to administrative review and approval. Public comment on administratives, Nick?
Yeah, do it.
Okay. Members of the public will now have an opportunity to ask questions and provide public comment on applications and discussions. To do so, please raise your hand or type your question in the chat in the application via the Zoom meeting platform. If you're calling in and cannot use the platform, you can press star 9 to raise your hand, or you can send your questions to staff via email at beaconhillac@boston.gov or via Twitter by tagging the Twitter handle at Boston Landmarks and using the hashtag BHOctober20hearing. We will repeat these instructions after each application throughout the hearing. Okay, any public comment on the administrative items?
Yes, Rochelle Gerwitz, would you like to make your comment?
Hi, Beacon Hill Civic Association. We only have a comment for the first one, 9 Anderson Street. We consider the property to have been historically constructed as a paired structure with 7 Anderson Street, as recognized in the National Park Service National Historic Landmark nomination. We feel that this is a great opportunity for the entrance to be reconstructed to match the retained condition at 7 Anderson Street, which is a double door up a diamond pattern, multi-pane stained glass transom. We submitted a Google Street View of these two addresses for your reference.
John, I see you in the video chat. Do you want to comment on that? John's the applicant for this.
Yeah, so you're saying change it. I mean, the problem is it won't work with on the interior to swing it now to a double door. And also, we never found anything that showed the original doors matching. Looking back in the history through it, there's actually a number of differences between the two buildings. They're similar. They're definitely similar, but there are also a lot of little detailed differences between them. We never found anything that shows matching of a double door on that front. And when you look at the interior, it kind of understands why, because you won't actually be able to get in properly if you did switch up those door systems.
Okay, I don't see any other hands being raised. Gabby, do you have any comments?
No, there are no comments.
Okay, I think we can close public comment for the admin.
Okay, any comments from the commissioners? I would make a motion that we approve the administrative items as submitted en masse.
I second the promotion.
Okay, the motion's been made and seconded, and let me get to my, there we go. Okay, Commissioner Allen.
Aye.
Commissioner Weinberg, aye. Commissioner Blumenthal?
Aye.
Commissioner Richman?
Aye.
Commissioner Wen?
Aye.
Great. Okay. So now we are on to the end, is just the ratification of the August minutes and the September minutes. Does anyone have any commentary on those? Okay, I'd make a motion that we approve the ratification of the August and September hearing minutes.
I second that motion.
Okay, great, thank you. Commissioner Allen?
Aye.
Commissioner Weinberg? Aye. Commissioner Blumenthal?
Aye.
Commissioner Richman?
Aye.
Commissioner Wen?
Aye.
Okay, do we have any staff updates, Nick?
No staff updates that I can think of.
All right.
Not for me either. All right. Just thanks everybody for your patience.
That one me too.
Thank you everybody. Thank you Gabby behind the scenes there, and Joe. Appreciate it. Okay, so this hearing is, I'm going to make a motion that we adjourn the October 2020 hearing of the Beacon Hill Architectural Commission.
I'll second it.
Thanks.
Commissioner Allen?
Aye.
Commissioner Weinberg? Aye. Commissioner Blumenthal?
Aye.
Commissioner Richman?
Aye.
Commissioner Wen?
Aye.
All right. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
See you in November.
Thank you, everybody.
Okay.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.